It is the last week of our series on Witness, and Cam gave us that helpful little summary of where we've been as we've thought about what it means to be the hands and feet of Jesus in the world, what it is to bear witness to his goodness and his love and what he's done for us. And, you know, we've thought about doing that through our lives and through our actions, also through our words, and sometimes the trickiness of putting words to our faith, something that's so meaningful to us, and yet when it comes to sharing it with other people and putting words around it, that can be a real challenge for a lot of us, particularly if, you know, our perception of the world around us is that it's cold towards things of faith, or that it's, you know, very secular and has, you know, a concern that we might be pushing our views on other people. And so I've been wrestling with that and thinking about that in practical ways. And I wanted to land this series in what I reckon is the simplest way that almost all of us can bear witness to all that Jesus has done in our life. To do that, I just want to walk through a few stories from the opening of the Gospel of John. And I want you to think about what is it that you notice that's happening in these stories. They're very simple stories, but what is it that you notice? What's the repeating theme through these stories? So the first one is coming from John chapter 1, verses 35 to 39. Two disciples of John the Baptist, because Jesus wasn't the only one who had disciples. All rabbis kind of had a group of followers that were called disciples. John the Baptist, this figure who's in the wilderness preaching about the coming of the kingdom, had disciples. Jesus has just been baptized by John the Baptist. People who were there saw heaven open and a dove descend on him and this voice saying, "This is my son with whom I'm well pleased." And they're like, "What is going on?" And two of these disciples of John the Baptist come and they start literally following, kind of stalking Jesus. And in verse 35 says, Jesus turns and asks, "What do you want?" And they say, "Where are you staying?" And he says, "Come and see." And they start following him. One of those disciples is Andrew. In John chapter 1, still in verses 40 to 42, we see that Andrew, having followed Jesus for, I don't know, maybe hours or a couple of days, immediately goes to find his brother, Simon Peter. And he doesn't give him like a sales pitch. He doesn't evangelize him. He doesn't preach a sermon. He just says, "I think we've found the Messiah." And he brings him to Jesus. And he says, "Come and see." In John 1, still in John 1, verses 43 to 46, Jesus finds Philip, and then Philip finds Nathanael. And Nathanael is very skeptical. And he says, he hears that this guy, Jesus, is from the town of Nazareth. And you might have heard this line. He says, "Nazareth, can anything good come from Nazareth?" And again, Philip doesn't argue the point. He doesn't try and defend Nazareth and its good standing citizens. He doesn't enter into a debate. He just says, "Come and see." I think John's quite intentional about the repetition of that phrase. We see it pop up again, not quite in the exact wording, but in John chapter 4, where there's an encounter between Jesus and a Samaritan woman that takes place at a well in the middle of the day. What we know of this woman is that she's an outsider. She's been pushed to the margins of her community. And the reasons why come out in her conversation with Jesus. But no one goes to the well in the heat of the day. They go in the morning and the evening, but here she is alone. Jesus and his disciples are walking through Samaria, which is interesting to begin with. They were the kind of sworn enemies of the Jewish people, and they stop at the well and Jesus has a conversation with her. I won't read it all, but go and read the story in chapter 4. She has this life-changing encounter with Jesus. Jesus kind of has insight into her life and all that has been going on for her. And when she's finished that conversation, she leaves her water jar. She forgets everything that she was there to do, and she runs to her village. And when she gets there, it says in John chapter 4, verse 28, she says, "Come, see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah?" And the people came out of the town and made their way toward him. The whole town comes out, and we hear later in the story that actually many believe in him. What's interesting about these people is none of them have theology degrees. They don't know or haven't heard of the term or the concept of evangelism. But what do we see them do? What's the invitation that they're making? You might want to call it out if you've picked it up. Come and see. John's quite intentional, I think, in his repetition of that phrase. We see people have an experience of Jesus that in some way is transformative for them, and their instinct seems to be to go and grab someone they know and love or the people that they're close to and just go, "Come and look at what I found. Come and see." Come and see is this recurring invitation throughout the Gospels. It's also, I guess, a theme of the book of Acts as we see the early church born. And what I would notice as well is that it's never just come and see a person. Yes, it's about Jesus, but it's also come and see what's happening around Jesus. It's come and see the movement that's building around this person. And often people haven't actually themselves got it all figured out. Have you noticed some of them said, "I think I might have found the Messiah"? And then the woman says, "Could this be the Messiah?" So these aren't people who have it all figured out themselves, but they do invite people to come and see what's happening around this person of Jesus. And so what I would say as we end our series on witness and what it means to be Jesus' presence in the world and witness to him, and we've covered a lot in this series, a lot of ground, and some of it's been quite challenging, but today I just want to land on an aspect of witness that's available to every single person in this room. And you do not need to be a great evangelist or arguer for the faith. And you actually don't need a very polished testimony. Some of us feel like, "I don't have much of a story to tell." Neither did a lot of these people, the disciples that only just met him. You don't need to have the answers to everyone's objections or questions about the Christian faith. You definitely don't need a Bible college degree. You just got to do what Andrew did and what Philip did and Nathaniel did and the woman at the well did. Just to say to someone in your life, "Come and see. There's something amazing about Jesus. And there's something happening amongst the people who claim to follow him. And it's good. And it's special. Come and see." I want to talk today about what it might look like to cultivate within our church a greater culture of invitation as the simplest tool we have to share our faith. It's probably the most natural, and actually I reckon it's probably the most powerful thing that we each have as we seek to engage in this spiritual practice of witness that we've been talking about. When I thought about this idea of how we cultivate a culture of invitation within our church, I was very mindful of what it could sound like. This can easily become, like, if you're in business, a KPI for church. I don't want this to feel like a strategy for filling these 5 seats that are left at the front. It's not that. It's not a church growth strategy. I know that maybe in the past you've been made to feel that way, or perhaps guilted into, like, "Oh man, I need to bring people to church events." I say that that's not what I'm seeking to do, but I also don't want to push away from this idea of invitation because it's so biblical and we see it again and again in the Gospels, which is why I asked Cam to do this. Because inviting people to something makes no sense if you yourself have not had some amazing life-transforming encounter yourself with Jesus. So as we think about the difference that Jesus makes in our actual lives, that is the thing that overflows into invitation. If it hasn't made a difference, I would not expect you to invite anyone to come and see this amazing person called Jesus if it hasn't made a difference in your life. But to the extent that it has, what we see in the Gospels is that the natural outflow of that is invitation to come and see and encounter Jesus for yourself. But as I said, it's not just about saying to people, come and see or encounter Jesus. Sometimes, and this may be true of you, certainly true of me, sometimes our pathway to Jesus is actually through the community of Jesus followers. The first encounter many people have of Jesus, they don't realize they're having an encounter of Jesus. They're actually having an encounter of his community. And then noticing something tangibly and beautifully and compellingly different about that group of people. And they say, what is different here? What makes this group of people so loving, so hopeful, so kind, peace-filled? What makes this group of people who are super random, to be honest, actually feel like family in a really powerful way? What's different? And as time goes on, they discover the glue that holds that community together and the power within that community is actually the person at the center of it, which is Jesus. And so come and see can actually just be an invitation to a table, into your home, into the community of Christ followers, so people have a tangible glimpse of what his kingdom is all about. Again, if you don't like this community, I wouldn't expect you to invite anyone here. But I think and I hope that for many of you, actually, your life is a lot richer for being part of this church family. That there's something powerful and beautiful to what we have here. Again, if it doesn't feel like family, if this place is not a fundamental part of your life and your rhythms and the way you move through the world, then that invitation will always feel hollow and inauthentic, and it'll probably come across that way. But I reckon for many of you, this is like family for you. This is a community that's been there in hard moments for you. It's prayed for you. It's held you. You've sat around tables and you've received more from this community than you've given to it. And if that's true, then invitation isn't something hopefully I need to convince you of. It should just be the natural overflow of our discipleship to Jesus. It's what happens when someone who has genuinely encountered Jesus lives in relationship with people who haven't. You can't help but want to say, guys, come and see what I found here. Jesus actually gives us a really, I think, helpful framework for thinking about who those people are who may actually be longing for, see what I did there? Be longing for this kind of invitation. I'm so glad Eliza wasn't here for that because she pays me out every day for my jokes. Jesus gives us a framework for identifying the people in our lives who might want this kind of invitation. In Luke, in chapter 10, we see Jesus sending out his disciples. Again, probably well before they're ready. They don't know heaps, but they got the power of the Holy Spirit. Jesus sends them out. He's like, go and pray for some people and heal some sick people and preach the good news that the kingdom of God is at hand and come and meet Jesus. So they all head out and he actually gives them some advice for the road. He says in Luke 10, when you enter a house, first say peace to this house. And if someone who promotes peace is there, your peace will rest on them. And if not, it will return to you. Now, it's a really strange concept, but he's basically saying, go out into the world and find people of peace. Find people who will receive you and not only extend hospitality to you, but will receive your hospitality. When you've found those people, stay there. it's likely that those people will be the ones who are receptive to what it is that you're bringing. Now, this idea of a person of peace, and you can go read the full chapter in Luke 10 and it fleshes out a little bit more of the concept. But it's become in and of itself, a terminology we use often when we think about witness and mission in the world. It's this idea of someone in your web of relationships who's just open and receptive and searching. Someone who feels ready, who is asking questions, who is maybe going through something and interestingly, they turn to you for support or for wisdom or for prayer. Someone who's open to meaning beyond what they're currently experiencing in life. People like this are more likely to lean into conversations about faith with you than they are to pull back. And you'll have experienced both of those, haven't you? Like when you talk with some people and there's a real curiosity and they're like, oh, I'm so glad I found someone I can have a conversation like this with. And then there's some people who just like pull back and the conversation ends. I'm like, sweet, read that. Jesus says like he describes it as peace resting or peace being returned to you. Use that concept. Don't force it with someone who's not ready and not in a season of curiosity and searching. But Jesus says, look for those people. Your peace will rest on them. And I think this framework for me takes the pressure off immensely. Not everyone out there needs an invitation. Like I'm a follower of Jesus. I walked through Parramatta Square the other day and someone very earnestly and probably in their mind very lovingly, but very forcefully came up to me and was like, you need this. And it was a pretty hectic gospel tract. And it had nothing to do. It didn't connect at all with where I was. There was no question. There was no curiosity about my stage of life. But perhaps what that person in their faith framework believes is that there's this need to go to everyone and make sure you get this message across. What this concept says is not everyone's actually ready or leaning in or searching. Jesus frees us by giving us permission to look for people of peace and have those conversations and take up those opportunities. It means that we're not responsible for converting everyone, let alone really converting anyone. It's as we said last week, it's joining in a conversation that the Holy Spirit is already having with a person. You're not responsible for winning arguments and having fights with people and winning debates. You're just looking for people who are already in some sense ready to receive. And so I want to pause there and actually get you to think about who that is in your life. Which neighbor is that? Which parent at the school gate is that? Pause and reflect. Think about them. Bring them to mind. Each of you are part of a big web of relationships. If you need some questions to help prompt that thought, who is open, searching, who's going through something and actually turning to you? Another question, who would experience what you've found in Jesus as genuinely good news for their life? They wouldn't receive it as a threat or as judgment, but something that could actually bring them life as well. As you think about H3O, as you think about your church family, who might appreciate an invitation into this kind of community? Remember, sometimes that's where it starts. People are longing for this kind of community. Not just a church service to come to or a church event, but a family like this one. So I want you to hold that person in mind. We're going to spend some time after I finish just praying for that person or those people. But I really hope that simplifies this idea of witness for many of you. And there's a sense of freedom in that, that it can be as simple as just like come and see. I do want to briefly talk about the flip side of cultivating a culture of invitation, and that's taking up the invitation ourselves. I don't want to make Sunday the be-all and end-all of our church. It's really not. Our church exists every day of the week, and it exists well beyond what we do on a Sunday. But I do know for many of us, this is our primary point of connection. We're about to have dinner afterwards. A lot of us, like, life is full and it's busy. And this is a time that we are committed to coming together and being in community with one another and centering ourselves around Jesus. So it's not the be-all and end-all, but I want to think about it for a moment. Because sometimes one of the most powerful things is you can do is actually just show up in community with consistency. And when I say show up, I don't mean just attend. Matt Gelding, when he came to from Soul Survivor, came to preach. He talked about, like, in ice hockey or something, or basketball, when people, like, come into the change rooms and they, like, tap the door on the way in or something like that, and just to, like, switch on to the game. And he's like, not physically, but maybe mentally, when we come to church, we need to, like, tap the door as we come in and just go, like, we're here and I'm present and I'm fully here and I'm fully here with the person who's in front of me and I'm fully present in this conversation and in this community. Yes, I'm here to receive, but I'm also here to give. And so one of the things that we can do is to cultivate the kind of community that people long to be a part of, is that when we're here, to be here and to be present. Do you know what? That requires a lot of intentionality. That is not easy to do. Flip, I find that really hard, and I'm the pastor, and if anyone should be switched on to church, it should be me. But I'm also here with my family and my kids after a really long weekend and a rugby gala day, and it's, like, pretty hectic, and it's the end of the day. So when we come, we do need to have a sense of, like, tapping in and being present to what God might be doing amongst us and who is in front of us. So be present, be available when you walk through the door to God and to others. And because I'd say this, inviting someone into something you are not yourself committed to is probably a thing that hinders our witness more than anything. Have you ever been, like, G'd up for something? Someone invites you, like, come be part of this great thing. And then you go to it and you're like, and they're not there. Or they come once and then you're there the second week and they're not there. And you're like, oh, they're not really committed to it and I'm expected to be. That actually is really tricky for people. So if we're inviting people into community, ensuring that we ourselves have fully taken up that invitation and are ourselves committed and present. When I think about this idea of invitation, I do want each of us to sit with this challenge for a moment. Who are you, or have you invited to come and see? Not just invited to church, that might be what that looks like. But who have you opened the door to and in some way provided an invitation to come and see what difference Jesus makes in my life, in your, and could make in your life? Come and see what it looks like when a bunch of people discover this and form community around it. Come to church on Sunday afternoon. Come to this dinner. Come to my house. I'm having people around. Come and discover this through an alpha course or something like that. So who have you invited? Who might you invite? And if you're like, well, no one, or not many people, or someone 2.5 years ago, that's okay, but I do want to just press into that a little bit and go, why is that? Because I feel like this is true. Like, Jesus has made a difference in our lives. I actually think for a lot of you, this community means a heck of a lot to you. It's really important to you. It's like family to you. So I wanted to think about some of the possible points of friction that we experience as we seek to witness to the faith that we have in Jesus and provide that invitation to others. This won't be true of everyone, and some of these might resonate more than others, but all of these have been true of me at some point or are true of me right now. First one's fear. To be honest, fear of being weird. Come and see my church, guys. Like, that invitation in itself carries a lot of baggage for some people. like depending on what experience they've had of church, there's like a bit of a meme that at least my Facebook feed thinks I like. And it's like when you invite your church friend to church and it'll just be a random church doing something super weird. I think that's a lot of our fears that like they'll come on that week. So that's a genuine one is fear. I'd like to think we're not that weird and that this is a nice place to come to, but I don't know, maybe I've been here too long. So fear is a genuine fear of being weird, fear of ruining a friendship that's going well, fear of seeming pushy or overly religious are all genuine fears that we have. One thing that many of us shared was last week was a sense of people being more spiritually open than we reckon they are. I actually think that's increasingly true in our culture. Not everyone, but certainly more people. The second one that I thought a friction point was assumptions that we make. Some people assume that like the invitation needs to be more formal than it needs to be. It might just be a passing comment going, oh, you, like if you're talking about church, like, you know, you can come. Like, don't wait for an event and a flyer to send to them. Just a comment that lets them know this is something that you can be part of as well. Or an assumption that someone wouldn't be interested. Like, let them make that call. If you sense that they're a person of peace, throw out the invitation. And if they say no, who cares? Like, I'm sure you can have, you know the relationship and you can navigate that. I think come and see is a very low stakes invitation, actually. Not a lot can go wrong with that. And then another one is just, it's just not on our radar. And maybe this is the truest one, that we're just not walking through our lives, like encountering people and going, do you know what? They might actually really love an invitation to church. Can I just say, just have it on your radar. Be prayerful. Go with God into everyday moments and have an awareness of who might want to come and see what Jesus has done in your life and what his community is like. So just pop it on your radar. I don't know if any of those, these, as I said, these are all things from my own life as well. So maybe they're not true for you. The final one I would mention is, I don't think this is true for many people here, but it might be. Like if your entire social network is Christian and all the people you hang out with are Christians, then that also can stop us from inviting people because no one we hang out with needs an invitation. And that's probably something in your own discipleship to wrestle with and work through. A final thing is a commitment from me and from our staff team and the leaders of our church. And I would say this, if there are things about our church that make it genuinely difficult to invite people to, please come and have a conversation. So if there's something like, I would invite people, but this logistical barrier keeps getting in the way, or do you know what? The way that we do this thing would not feel safe for them. That's a great conversation to have. So don't just sit there with that thought. Let's have the conversation. Reach out. I'd love to find out like what works and ways that we can adjust or make accommodations for people as well. If I am hosting a dinner and I text a bunch of people to come over and all of them say that time's no good for me and I can't make it, I don't just plow ahead with the dinner, set the table and cook all the things and then go, I can't believe they didn't show up. But churches can totally be like that. Keep doing the same thing. Everyone said that doesn't actually work for us. We used to meet in the morning and so a bunch of people were like, all of our kids have sport. Girls play soccer on a Sunday. We do nippers. That was a great moment for our church to go, hang on, is that true of enough people that we should think about moving our time? I think we did that 3.5 years ago, surveyed our church. We were meeting at 9:30 and 95%, which is a funny figure because I think everyone but one personal individual who filled it out said, actually, I think 4 p.m. is better. And we asked the question, what's better for you guys? But also, what do you think would be better for your neighbors, your friends, people you might invite to church? And the same result, people thought 4 p.m. was better. So we moved the time. So we're super open to doing stuff like that. What I would say, though, is did you invite those people? Did the people that we shifted for did that allow you to feel more confident to invite? So I would encourage us, yes, we want to be flexible and open and think about ways that we can lower those barriers. Gosh, this is getting practical, not very sermony. So just to close, come and see is still the invitation. It was the invitation we see again and again in the Gospels. It's always been the invitation from the very first disciples. It's one of the most easy ways that we can share our faith with people. Just come and see what difference Jesus makes. Come and sit amongst a community or around a table with people whose lives have been changed by the person of Jesus and allow them to encounter him. All of these words up here ring true for me. What we've found collectively in Jesus, the purpose, the sense of identity, the community, the love, the family. And it would be such a shame for those things to be contained within this group and within these walls, don't you think? Allow these things to actually move out through your relationships. Speak about them, share about them. Find ways to give people an insight into the difference that Jesus makes. And if they lean in, if they're a person of peace, just throw out a come and see invitation. I'm going to give us time to pause, reflect, pray. I want you, if you thought of someone, to actually bring that person to mind. And gosh, you'd be surprised by what the Spirit does when we just bring people to him in terms of the encounters and the conversations that come up. So pray for them. Pray with faith. Ask God for an opportunity to extend that invitation.